Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman Johnny Beattie's here, former Clermont and France hooker Benjamin Kayes is here, and we've got a full lengthy analysis of the two classic all-French Champions Cup quarterfinals to come, haven't we, guys? Do you enjoy them?
It's the celebration of how good French rugby can be if they decide to take Europe seriously. Having all those clubs in the quarters and then obviously three out of four in the semi is pretty spectacular. It makes me particularly happy.
Look, I think we saw really different levels of play. Like we were talking UBB Racing, and then you flip over to La Rochelle, completely different. We'll get onto the games in a minute, but two absolute grinds that reminded me of top 14 maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. And then the sort of new school, like the new face of what French rugby is like, which we've been used to and spoilt with this season and last. So we'll get on to the games in a second, but look, great they're there, but a real difference in the standards of the game. They were ridiculous games.
We will celebrate the fact that there are three French teams in the Champions Cup semi-finals, as well as talk about the games and how good they were or bad they were. But how are you guys doing this week? Because Benji, the UK has opened up a bit. So you were telling us last week about how you were quarantined and you'd had various issues. So how's things?
So I had to have a week at home after going back to France. That was the unpleasant surprise of shit paperwork. But after that, pubs have reopened, restaurants have reopened. It's still 8 degrees when things are at its best. So people are in pubs and they're super happy. You could tell it's really cute, actually. So we went away with the family and they're down the coast in Weymouth. Very, very cute place. You see the sun, you know, you can play on the beach, whatever. It's got nothing to do with Osgo and stuff where Johnny is, but still, it's still a beach. And you can tell people in the pub, they're almost looking at you like, we made it, you know, we're there, you know, we're having a good time. But listen, they're still freezing the nuts off and they're still outside. So it's not normality yet.
And the sun has been out here, Johnny. It's still freezing, but the sun's been out. So we might be a bit less jealous than usual of where you are. But how's things in the south of France?
It's quite strange, actually. Obviously now a bit jealous looking back at the beer gardens in England, not in Scotland, but in England, certainly. Here we're in lockdown 3.0. in France, so we're in a kind of soft lockdown. So the kids have been given a 3-4 week holiday, shall we say.
Is it a holiday?
Well, do you know what? Yeah, it is. I mean, they're young, we're lucky, there's not too much stress, they're not that annoying. The youngest one's not sleeping, obviously, but look, with lockdown rules, you can go 10K from the house, so we can get to the beach, we can get out, the weather's been decent, so I'm not going to complain. It's a sort of soft lock. I don't really know. Like, the lockdowns here have been really soft, to be fair, and we're lucky with where we live, so we'll just get on with it. Hopefully it's the last one. Vaccines are on their way to France, apparently, eventually, so just looking forward to the light at the end of this tunnel.
Well, let's chat about the two all-French quarterfinals then, because no tries in either, and they weren't the best advert, as we were saying, for French rugby or European rugby, were they? Bordeaux Racing was particularly poor, wasn't it, Benji? What happened?
I don't know if it was that poor, but to be honest, it was racing without Finn Russell, without Henri Chavancy, without Virimi Vakatawa, right? So, I mean, when you have Kurt Nebile, I think it was Clément Saxe that plays in centre, I was like, all right, this is a rotated, a bit random sort of racing team. But they did well, to be fair. And they did well in just the grinder type of team who's playing, you know, away from home and wants to sneak in a little win. So you could tell two teams that were playing with a bit of a handbrake, you know, because they didn't want anybody to be able to challenge them. in the end, I think there was one guy, probably one player, and you'll know pretty quick who I'm talking about, who lived up to his standards, and it was Mathieu Jalibert. Because not only did he kick the winning penalty, yes, of course, thanks to Tame Funa, which is cute because yes. he left racing pretty annoyed. And you could tell he almost did that contest and then turned around, looked at Laurent Travers and wanted to tell him to go, you know, stuff it up himself after he almost took the life out of Kurt Nebil, out of a high tackle. Kurt Nebil had a tank that just, you know, drove right on top of his head. But Mathieu Jalibert, I thought during the whole game, he was the only one actually playing with a bit of intent, playing with a bit of full-onness, whereas all the others were playing with a bit of a handbrake. So not a great game, but listen, not all knockout rugby is always going to be extraordinary. You could tell it was two teams who were playing with a bit of added pressure because they didn't want to fuck up, basically.
I think as well, you add to those power plays. So Racing looked really underpowered. Camille Shah also had to leave the field after like 3-4 minutes. So like your biggest power runner is gone. And that's it. I think Racing just came a bit unstuck. Without that go forward, especially in the back line when you're playing against Remy Lamarat, Ben Lam, you know, the big boys, big physical blokes. And normally when you watch them at the arena up in Paris, they break that gain line easily. Against Bordeaux, Christophe Urios is a stuffy, well-organized coach. They just had no answer. They couldn't do anything. And look, it wasn't the best game. I think for the first 30 minutes, not one team made it to the opposition 22. Like it was just, there was nothing happening. It was a sort of grind in the middle of the pitch, people knocking over penalties. And look, it wasn't the best advert. Like we said, the quality of the rugby has moved on. It's kicked on massively in France over the past 2-3 seasons. And that was a little bit of, they almost playing with a wee bit of fear, like you said, Benji. You could tell they didn't want to make mistakes. They were feeling each other out and it just never really burst into life. But look, absolutely, the point that you made about Big Ben's absolute mullering of Kirtley Beale. But I thought compared to what we've seen over the past 5, 6, 7 weeks, that was really well dealt with by the ref. As much as now, like you heard, there was 3 stoppages during the game. You heard the coaches telling the players to go and warm back up again because everyone was cooling. It's taking so long with the videos. But I liked the use of language, how the refs broke it down. They said, look, it's a low. He's attempting to wrap. He's bent at the hips. No time to correct himself, so play on. Whereas I think maybe 5, 6, 7 weeks ago, he'd have been off the pitch. And ultimately, it's him that then wins the game or gives Mathieu Jalibert the chance to be the hero again and knock over that penalty to win.
I reckon in that one, so Laurent Travers, the coach, was saying how disappointed he was. But when you see the teams that he line up, I think he almost tried to squeeze out some positive about saying that he's got some youngsters. So Camisha came off, but Teddy Bobigny, who is probably France's number 5 hooker, something like that. So he's not far from the French team. He's been picked a few times, you know, to Nations Cup and all that. Did well. There's Jordan Joseph, who finally, the big number 8, who's double world champion, who was 17 or 18 or something. Then he was put into the under 20s and then won the World Cup with them. He's an absolute phenomenon. And everybody's sort of waiting for the phenomenon to finally deliver on the big stage, right? And I think for the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, he has been. And I think Laurent Travers was basically trying to find the glass half full of saying, yes, we're gutted. But with the circumstances of missing all those X, Y, and Z players, it would have been complicated anyhow. It is a weird year. Look, Sale were playing a quarterfinal of La Rochelle having won one game. They didn't even win one pool game. You know what I mean? It is a bloody weird, weird year of European rugby. So that's why all the boys, I think they're very happy, but they're not that disappointed either. And Laurent Travers was trying to say, right, at least we got some youngsters to come through to deliver and to show that if you're going to have to count on them for the future.
Do you think that that's their last bite with this sort of group of players they have? Like you think about Donnacarai and Anthony Klaassen, Zeebo, Chavonsi, coming to the end of a cycle. You talked about Colom, young tight end that came on. We talked about him earlier in the season. Like loads of potential. But do you think they've been in finals rugby the past couple of seasons? They sort of missed their opportunity. Do you think it's finished for them now? Because they're going to go through transition. There's lots of young kids coming through that are exciting. But do you think this year was maybe their last year to try and make a tilt for that title? Do you think they could do it next year? They got enough quality in the squad? Or do you think it's going to be a rebuild slowly over the next couple of seasons?
Where I agree with you, and I'm tempted to say that it's going to be a rebuild because they are super young, homebred talent that's coming through. Colin Gardelou-Said, Colombe, the tight end, Bobigny, Shah, Palou, the back row.
That was great as well.
Diallo, the number 6, the replacement. Jordan Joseph, the 8. I mean, there's an absolute shit ton of guys. There's that young number 9. I can't remember, he was with the under 20s, who was going to be the next new hot thing. Who comes from Brittany, who comes from Van. Nolan Le Garec, that's his name. And there's loads and loads of them. But Racing are the only club who basically, oh, we want to pick a center. Yeah, we're going to pick Gael Fico, and that's who they just signed for next year.
There's your rebuild. Mate,
so exactly, your rebuild is going to be massively fast-tracked. So next year, you will still have Finn Russell, Vakatawa, Gael Fico. And so you're even forgetting about Henri Chavancy. You will still have the Dodovan Taufifenua, you know, who's pretty electric and pretty good. You will still have some Juanimov and some whatever. So I think that rebuild is going to be massively fast-tracked.
And Benji, you feared for Clermont, but they were in the game until right near the end. I've got to ask you about your mate Morgan Parra, because he's coming for a bit of flack over here. It's not obviously not his fault that Clermont lost, but what about the kick at the end? Did he rush it?
I 150% rushed it. To be honest, it's not like they had to kick to the win, right? They had to kick it, receive the kickoff, you know, do 80 meters or 70 meters to score the winning try with the conversion to then beat Toulouse. Okay. So people should shut up from time to time and realize that it wasn't down to him. If anything, they should say, well, Morgan Parra has been, like, listen, he's one of my best mates and I rate him highly. He hasn't played very well this year, but against Wasp, he wins that game for Clermont.
Yeah,
with his experience, his leadership, and the way that he controlled the tempo, he did really well. That game, to be honest, so my heart was with Clermont. My brain was telling me, wow, red alerts, red zone everywhere, because Toulouse are just going to trash them. And then he's chucking it down, so the things were a little bit weird. They properly gave their best, I thought. They really, really played with a lot of intensity. They gave absolutely everything they had. You know, the young seven, Alex Fischer, what Fritz Lee always being there, Camille right. Lopez getting injured after 6 minutes, and Tim Nainai Williams still did what he could. George Morla is a beast of a human being. Damien Penaud, you can still get him. Kotaro Matsushima, I'm done questioning how good he is. He can be freakishly good. And Morgan Parra had a really, really good game. So, you know, it's just a matter of Toulouse, mate. It's more that I want to actually remember. You talk about end of cycle. There's clearly end of cycle of Clermont, because Franck is going to leave, because some leadership roles are maybe going to be wobbling, and there's going to be a lot of transformation in the summer. But Toulouse, mate, now that they've beaten my heart team, I can sort of admit how good they are. It annoys the hell out of me. Don't get me wrong. Huh? I'm super jealous, and inside me there's almost some hatred. But when they're good, bloody hell, they're good. They're committed. They've got the right balance between a ginormous forward pack, but some guys who can still go. They've only got Jerome Kano when you need leadership. They've only got Antoine Dupont and Romain Tamac when you need a 9 and a 10. They've got the little magician, Cheslin Kolbe, who, you know, can do anything. And now they're even getting some young guys like Mathis Lebel and all that to come out of there. So I'm very, very impressed with them. And again, I will repeat every single week, Julien Marchand, the hooker and captain, is taking a whole other dimension.
What really pissed me off was that he didn't get man of the match. Yeah, like, he was unbelievable. I'm like, I don't know how he's not getting the recognition, like, from whoever's picking it on TV, but I'm like, if Benji's picking it, he's definitely getting man of the match because he's got a man crush. But 2 weeks on the trot, it's been Intermac, but he has been phenomenal. And like in that front row, you got Cyril Bai, who ball carries, bumps, turns, offloads. Every time he touches the ball, Charlie Famaina, who destroys people in contact, carries. Mate, they've got some serious grunt. And the Arnold boys behind them, who like rallied everything at line-out time, super well organized for huge men as well. They can carry. Like I can't remember seeing blokes that tall carry that hard. So like they're the front five, the grunt. And the pressure they put Clermont under at scrum time, the penalties they won, and line-out time. Again, we talked about it previously, but just that inability of Clermont to jump in defensive line-out time, or then when they're on the deck, defend it properly without giving away a penalty. And like you said, I thought Parra was really good, considering I thought he was knocked out as well in the first 10 minutes. Remember, he got hip clash with Peter Aki, and he was clearly, for me, I thought he should have had an HIA, but he had to stay on the pitch because his halfback partner was off. And look, he played the entire game effectively, and he was out on his feet at the end. So look, mate, it was a huge battle. And again, you mentioned him dragging Clermont through the game the week before. He nearly did it again. People hate playing against him in France. I'd be the first to stick my hand up and say I hated playing against them. Horrible little nine. And look, again, might be the end of the cycle, like you said, but it was a huge game. And look, if Clermont had just flicked those couple of things, if they'd managed to get their discipline sorted at line-out time and at scrum
18
time.
18 penalties, mate. 18.
Yeah, 18. I could not believe they didn't get a yellow card. That was the other surprising thing, was that nobody got sent to the bin. So they were kind of fortunate. But look, those simple things that you can do off-field during the week, organizational week, we've mentioned it before on the podcast about how Clermont have kind of been shown up a little bit, and they got undone again at home by Toulouse, who were excellent up front. So look, I'm much more, that one is much more enjoyable compared to the Bordeaux game, don't get me wrong.
Well, we can bring someone else into the conversation now who was front and center in that game at the weekend and broke Benji's heart as Toulouse beat Clermont to make it through to the Champions Cup semi-finals. Toulouse center Zach Holmes joins us. How are you, Zach?
Good, thanks for having me on, boys.
We were just chatting about the games, the two all French games, not the best spectacles, but Clermont-Toulouse certainly better than Bordeaux Racing, according to the guy. So what was it like to play him?
Yeah, it was a strange game. I guess playing against Clermont quite a few times and how we want to play, not frustrating, but yeah, it was quite slow. We were both trying to play similar with the conditions, control field position, try and get ascendancy up front. Fortunately, our forwards probably got on top with our set piece, and that's what got us over the line.
Had you won at Clermont before, mate, or is that your first win up there?
No. I think they were putting out stats. I don't think Toulouse has won there since 2002, they were saying. And yeah, no, I haven't actually played there too many. I remember playing La Rochelle on my first year. I think we took about 60.
We've all been there.
Yeah. So it's not, I don't think my second or third time I've played there. It's one of the few, I haven't played Clermont away too often, so. No, it's a lot less imposing without the crowd there, that's for sure.
Zach mentioned the stat there, a lot less imposing without a certain Benjamin Kayser lining up in the club.
I was waiting for it, to be honest.
You'd never have lost at home to Toulouse, Benji, in your time there. Never.
Not at home, but to be honest, like, listen, I was just telling the boys, we were going through game after game. Before the game, my heart was obviously Clermont. My mind was scared shitless, because when you boys decide to switch it on, you know, when you set target on something, I mean, there's some bit of me that is so jealous against what Toulouse is capable of doing that it is almost a little bit of hatred. But I definitely agree that you guys, when you guys play, bloody hell, you can seriously play. And so, like I said, I agree with you. The only thing that has been a little bit disruptive is that it started chucking it down before the game. So you boys had to adapt the game plan last minute, whatever. But this is why Toulouse is so good for me personally, is because you've got plan A, B, and C. If it's dry and you're ready to chuck it, but well, you've only got Chesney Colby and all your best mates, whatever, just give it to that freak and then, you know, you can see what happens. But you also have a massive set of forwards who are ready to take, you know, any sort of opportunity to demolish some people. So I thought Clermont actually, in terms of heart and giving their best, had a really good game, but they were just beaten by a better global, more compact, more dominant side.
It's one of those where it's really good weather all during the week. You sort of know it's going to be raining on the weekend. You're getting told during training, like, yeah, we need to keep it more tight and play field position and stuff. But when the sun's beaming down, you're like, oh, I'm just throwing around, play the Toulouse way. There was a big focus on just shutting down the X factor players at Clermont, and that's the danger. Your Yatos, your Matsushima, Rucker, Penner. There's so many players that can just individually hurt you, and that's what our biggest concern was going into the game. And I think we were able to nullify that.
George Moyler?
Yeah, and George. Yeah, that was watching a few clips during the week. Hopefully, he didn't get too much ball.
Speed bump.
Send him back inside to Peter on the inside, hopefully. So, watching his clips doesn't fill you with a lot of confidence going into the game. But with the rain, it limited. The backs weren't, none of the backs really were able to get into the game. We didn't have much ball. It was definitely a forwards game. And thankfully ours were able to get on top in that regard. So yeah, hopefully Bordeaux. I watched a bit of the game before the Bordeaux game. I actually haven't watched.
Don't bother, Zach.
Not great.
Not much to see, mate.
they're playing well, and I think dangerous. But thankfully we're back at home because we had two away games, and they've been good to get through those.
Mate, you mentioned a couple of things there. You mentioned playing the Toulouse way. To you, what does that mean as a back that's slotted in everywhere? We'll get on to how you've been playing 10, 12, 13, fullback if asked, everywhere. The Toulouse way. So under Mola, a new coaching regime, you've got some world-class players in the team. What is the Toulouse way?
The traditional Toulouse way is jeu de main. So you want to play with it. We'll play ball in hand. That's adapted. We still want to play field position. We still, we're not just throwing the ball around everywhere. But it's just about creating opportunities to use our, I guess, individual qualities. The shape that we play with is built in a way that we can get the ball to the guys in space and hopefully create those one-on-one opportunities. It's hard because there's not a lot of structures like someone like Clermont where their first phase is very detailed. They're very, very strong off their set piece and their detail around that. We are looking more to create chaos, I guess, get into counter-attack, get into turnover, attack around the ruck and then play that offload game, get in behind defences with our ability to stand in the tackle. And the more chaos that we can create, I guess, the better we believe our attack can function.
That's like a perfect way of summing it up.
Textbook.
So I don't know if you knew much about the way that Guinoves would basically make sure that the boys were always, always humble and on the ground. There was this thing about Toulouse that there was almost this tone of voice before the games that you could tell that they were always playing down their team. And, you know, Toulouse has never been the team to say, oh, no, we're going to beat this guy, we're going to beat this guy. It's always it's going to be a struggle, and this guy is injured, and that guy is uncertain, and we're not sure. Hugo Mola, I think, has completely taken over the Guinoves tradition of doing that. Because before the game, Julien Marchand, I'm just not sure. You know, the Munster game was so incredibly tough. Famuina is barely standing. We're going to might have one Arnold brother who was just not so sure. They were all freaking playing. So yeah. I'm asking, is it something that you boys just look over, or is it genuinely sort of the DNA of Stade Toulousain? You know, don't give anything, play mega, mega humble.
Yeah, I understand, like, especially how Hugo sets it up, even with the meetings and stuff. He likes to get a bit of a us against them mentality. Everyone's kind of against us. Everyone's coming for us. I'm not too sure about Guinoves. I guess I came to France just as he was finishing up. But with Hugo, I know he does like to use the media, I guess, to try and inspire the boys, I guess, more so the French boys. I think they probably buy into it a bit more than some of the foreign boys, but I guess he does use it to try and get that emotional response and try and use that just as messaging through the week as well to try and promote that. Yeah, I guess that emotional response. But top 14, it's a grind. You need to find different levers, I guess, to get that emotional response and to get that energy sometimes, especially now we're coming into a block of 10, 11 games in a row. You need to find different ways to get that energy, to get that spark, because otherwise, you look ahead, it can become a bit of a drag sometimes.
Talking of coaches and emotional responses, you mentioned Hugo Mola, who you're playing under at the moment. Your previous coach at La Rochelle, Patrice Collazo, known for his emotional responses. How do they differ?
Different emotions, I'd say. Patrice, I had a great relationship with Patrice before I start saying anything, but it's just, I think with Patrice, I just hadn't experienced someone that, not passions, but he's just so involved in the team and how much he would watch games and opposition and even the training, and just he gets so frustrated if it didn't go how he wanted it to go because he was so invested in it. For me, arriving in France, and I guess in Australia it's a bit more laid back in terms of the coaching and just generally how things are, it was quite a shock just to be getting screened out in French. I didn't know what he was saying, so didn't was a bit more of ducks back. Now I've got a bit more of an idea if he goes screaming at me. It was just that emotional and it's just so involved. I think Hugo is more relaxed, probably doesn't take as much of the sessions and stuff. He leaves it a bit more up to the assistant coaches and stuff, where I found with Patrice at La Rochelle, he would control most of the stuff, and if he wasn't happy, he wouldn't be afraid letting you know.
In terms of, if you get through this next round, I'm sure we'll get onto top 14 a bit, but if you do get through this next round of games, who would you rather face? Would you rather be up against your old team La Rochelle, or would you rather play against Leinster?
For me personally, I'd rather play La Rochelle in the final. I think even for the club as well, for them to beat Leinster in the semi and make the final, I think that would be quite huge. And Leinster's been watching that Leinster Exeter game. They were, very impressive. I think, La Rochelle at home, it's a difficult task. And I think it's just a shame they don't have supporters in there, because that would make it even tougher for Leinster. But, I would – it's always going to be a special place in my heart at La Rochelle. Gave me the opportunity to come over here and play, and I still – are quite close with quite a few of the boys. So I hope they can make the final. It'll be fun to play against them in the final, hopefully.
I want to ask you about a guy that is mentioned every week at the moment by Benji, Julien Marchand. Benji has got a massive man crush on Julien Marchand. So give us some dirt. There must be something wrong with him, because he's doing everything right at the moment. Give us something. What's wrong with Julien Marchand?
I haven't really got any dirt on him, to be honest. He was enjoying himself after the game on the week, and I can tell you that he's got the week off this week. So he's,
of course he does.
taking it easy, but he just works hard. I think when I first came to Toulouse, I didn't know too much about him. I'd seen him play a little bit, like coming off the bench and stuff. Massive physical specimen, like a big boy, lifts. Big weights, and just over since I've been here, just his progression to where he is now in terms of playing international rugby and dominating playing international rugby as well. I think it just shows how much hard work he's put in. And I heard you guys speaking last week about Benji's being. I think, it's true. I think he's taken his game to another level, and he would be up there being, in the premier hookers in the world now. And it's just, you just see his carrying as well. Like he's carrying his set piece, his lineouts, his throughout. Everything's just spot on. And
I think he's really reaching some serious highs. But on top of that, but I know him personally, and he's a top dude. What I was really impressed with, and that I can't answer, but you can, is that he was made captain of Toulouse mega, mega young. There were still some big old fellas. I mean, I play with Joe Tacori, so I know the space that he takes in the changing room, how important he is. He's like a natural captain, right? He's like a leader by a life leader, whatever you want to call it, a heart, heartbeat leader of a team. So maybe he doesn't even need to have that captaincy role or whatever. But you've got Jerome Kano, you've got all those boys that are around him. But still, Juju Marchand, I think at 22 or 23, he was already captain of Toulouse. How was that perceived by sort of the older fellas? How did he behave, or did he just shut his mouth and do his thing?
Yeah, he's not someone that says a lot or anything. He's quite direct in when he speaks and that kind of stuff. Joe does lead a lot of the communication stuff in terms of the huddles and after training and that sort of aspect.
And the socials.
Yeah, definitely that side as well. But I think Joe it's more his... just the way he handles himself. He's so professional. The way he plays rugby, he's so combative. He's so aggressive. I think that aspect, people just follow him. Like you watch him play and the way he plays, and you're like, I want to play like that. But unfortunately, I don't have that size. But he's just, when you watch him play, he's always going forward. He's always running hard. And it's just, it is inspiring. I think the generation coming through at Toulouse, which he's probably the leader of, and I think that's probably a decision why he was made captain so early, for that generation to come through. And now you're seeing DuPont put more in a leadership position, and that group, the more experience they get, use their knowledge from the playing for the French team, bring it back to us, and then you've got Joel and Jerome acting as the sort of two older heads. But there's a good dynamic with the leadership, and it allows the foreign and the French boys to probably be closer as well, when you've got sort of both sides involved in the leadership of the team.
And a guy that was just mentioned, who all three of you have in common, all three of you have had nights out with him, I'm sure, Joe Tacori. I mean, we've had people on the podcast before, and they've spoken about what Joe might be like on a night out. Do you want to share some stories with Johnny and Benji about Joe?
It's very dangerous if you get caught in his vicinity. It's you know you're in for a long night. He's just an animal. I think the amount he can of alcohol he can consume. Not say he's unaffected, but just his ability to back up the next day. And like, we've even been on like camps and stuff, and we know he got a big day in the morning. We'll go out for dinner, and then he'll drag a few of the Espoir Academy boys with him, and you're like, oh no. You try and get out by about midnight. You hear he's got back about 4 or 5 a.m. The Espoir boys barely moving and training. He's just running around like he's had 10 hours sleep. But yeah, it's just incredible. He's always leading the charge. He's always the last one to finish. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how he does it, but yeah, I think he's just adapted. And now, good luck if you're stuck with him.
Picked 4 or 5 times for the English Babas. That will give you the perfect way of training for that type of stuff. He is unbeatable, untouchable. He's a freaking bamboo. Like he'll move a little bit, but he will never fall. he's just unbeatable. But mate,
his kryptonite's gin. If you get caught with him, I think gin's the one. I've had gin with him a couple of times. He seems to struggle a bit with it. So if you ever, get caught with him, try and get him on the gin.
It's kryptonite. I love that.
That's the inside knowledge that this podcast is all about. So we love that. You've been in France for 6 years now, I think, Zach. So just give us an insight into how much you're loving life over there. And you mentioned kind of when you first came out over the sort of culture clash, I guess, from what you were used to in Australia. So, how are you finding it now and how much do you love it over there?
Yeah, I've really embraced it. I've really enjoyed my time. It's gone really quick. Like when you say it's almost been 6 years, I'm actually going for my nationality. I've got my test next week. So, going for my French passport. I want to stay in France. I've still got another year season next, but I'm doing my BP Jeps to get my coaching stuff done as well. So I want to stay in France if I can, play out my career here, and then hopefully there's an opportunity to get into coaching or whatnot in France. That would be my ideal. But yeah, my fiance really enjoys it here as well. It's been tougher for her, not being able to do as much with COVID and stuff. But I think it's brought the families, especially the foreigners, closer here, because we haven't been able to go home, or no one's been able to come. So it's definitely brought the foreign people here, and we've all supported each other with that. But I'm loving it in France. I want to stay here as long as I can, hopefully finish my career.
Any tips from either of you two for Zach on the citizenship test?
Yeah,
study, mate. You know that little booklet they give you? Study. It's like that was I took it every day on the bus. I take it on the bus and ask the French boys. They didn't know any of the answers to the questions. So if you can get the ones they don't know, then you're in. Like questions about the philosophers from like the 19th century, Benji, all this stuff you'll have to help them out with. But that booklet is gold dust. Get into that. Get Googling and get studying, because it's hard. Mate, that interview, I did mine in Bordeaux. It was an hour and a half on culture, economics, politics, geography. It was intense. And then my wife went in afterwards and she was 30 minutes.
I've tried to book the one that is apparently easier, but... we'll see next week.
There's more than one citizenship test. You can go for the easy version or the hard one.
There's two different ones, but they say one. There's two different companies run it, and they say one's apparently easier. But
there's the South of France nationality. You know, it doesn't mean much. It's just that you're mega. That means that you're mega chilled. Chilled and relaxed about your life. That's about it.
Are you gonna have to give up your French passport now, Benji? Now you're in England. You have to give it up, or do they let you hold on to it?
Fuck no. Listen, I'm keeping that passport close to me. And I tell you what, I'm going to be the passport police, basically. If you take a French passport because you love France and you want to stay in France as long as you want, I am all for that. That's extraordinary, because the reason why you boys stay so long is because you fall in love with the country, the culture, the this and that. What fucks me off is if somebody takes a passport and then fucks off away from France. But like, if you want to stay, please do.
I was going to say, sod the citizenship test next week, Zach. You've passed. Benji's given you a seal of approval. Oh, so
sweet.
Got the green light.
I'll put that through to the prefecture.
Mate, we had a bit of chat from one of your teammates who's been on the podcast before. So Jerome Kano was saying, can we ask you why you still insist on wearing your Crocs around the city centre of Toulouse? He's got a real bee in his bonnet about your Crocs. Can you let us know why, if you're that big on French culture, fashion, and good wine and drink, why you are still wearing your Crocs? That's the question that he sent in.
I took inspiration from old Ford's coach, Regis Son, who used to wear them proudly. at the Stad. I actually only just pulled him out for the first time last week. I got a bit of a knock on my heel, so I was like, "Oh, it's a bit." I just put the Crocs on because I couldn't. I didn't really want to put shoes, and oh, Jesus,
the creep.
Just some of the comments I was getting last week was enormous. But nah, they're very comfortable. If you haven't tried them, Johnny, I definitely recommend them.
You know, I tried to buy a pair, and my wife was like, "If you buy them, I'm going to divorce you." That was how strongly she felt.
Any comeback for Jerome if we have him on again? Anything you can fire back at him?
Trying to play more than a week. He's about 1 week on, 3 weeks off at the moment. So he's finishing up nicely till the end of
smart man.
We speak a lot on here about the kind of French culture, the coaching over there, all sorts of aspects on and off the field. But if there was one thing you could say that you've loved most about France, whether it's the wine, the food, the just anything, what's the thing you love most about France?
Oh, well, the wine would definitely be up there. I think being in Toulouse, I've sort of been going to Bordeaux a few times, and I'm getting married just next to Saint-Emilion. So that actually has been something I had no interest in before I came to France, and now I've got way too many bottles that I actually don't know where to put them. But I think, well, just being in France and just being able to travel around, not just travel around Europe, but just see other places in France, and just Toulouse is a good place in terms of where it is, just to, there's so much around. Just to go to towns like Albi and Montauban, and just little towns, and just go for the day and just have a look around and experience it, and just things like that. Like things you can't really do in Australia. Just so different from living in Australia where you're so isolated, I guess. We love it over here. We want to stay over here. And I think, everyone that comes and visits us and is able to experience France, it's just a great place to be.
What do you reckon, Benji? He's got his passport, eh?
Easy. Hey, if you repeat exactly what you said, but when you speak about wine, just sneak a little case under the table, mate. Just discreetly, just push one there.
Mate, are you going to be involved this weekend? Are you playing against Cast?
I don't know for sure, but we're pretty light on in the back, so we've had a lot of injuries in our backs. I think most of our forwards will be getting the rest. But yeah, I'm not too sure. I think I might be one of the few that has to back up this week, but. I think it's a big game against Cast. I think they've had almost 3 weeks off now to prepare and for the derby as well. So yeah, they're gonna come out pretty fired up. So, and we dropped our last top 14 game against Montpellier. So for us, it's a big game. We have aspirations to finish in the top two, and I think it's important to finish in the top two if you're going to go and win in the Brennus. So, it's a big game for us. And yeah, we've struggled against Cast over the last few years as well. So we know what's coming.
And you're playing centre at the moment, Zach. You spent most of the recent years playing 10 with Roman Entomac outside you. What's the shift? Has Hugo Moller sat you down and had a conversation?
Not really. It's more Roman playing so well at 10 and playing at the French team. I've been playing 10, I guess, when he goes to the French team. He's got a lot of options to play how he wants the team to play. For me, it's just trying to play as much as possible. We got a lot of good backs. Ideally, I played most of my rugby at 10. I also played a little bit of centre when I was at La Rochelle and Brock James came. So it's, for me, it's not too difficult. But even with the system that we have here, we're trying to get our backs involved as much as possible. So, yeah, for me, I feel most comfortable at 10, but we just want to be playing, being on the field. So if that's at centre, if that's at fullback, then, yeah, that suits me fine.
Well, thanks ever so much for coming on, Zach. And good luck against Cast this weekend. Good luck against Bordeaux next month. And more importantly, good luck in the citizenship exam next week.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Thank you. Yeah, I'll get back to studying, I think. So, yeah, got me a little bit worried now, Johnny.
No, mate, you'll be sweet. Get studying with the French boys there. We'll get you practicing. Good rehearsal for it. It'll be easy.
Thanks, guys.
Well done, mate. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Zach.
Go well. To be honest, he's one of those utility backs that save a club, because he's got the humility to say that Romain Entomac's been killing it, so he's not going to play 10 anymore. But there's also Sofiane Guitoun, who's killing it in the centre. There's Peter Aki, you know, who I didn't think was going to be as good as that, and he's absolutely trashing it for the last couple of years. So, and he's, but every single time they call upon him, he delivers, right? He delivers 10, he delivers 12. And those are those guys, I reckon, that make a team win. And if they manage to go on to challenging or winning on both tableau or whatever, on both competitions, then it's really down to guys like him whose attitude and multitasking talent is top level.
And like you said, like a Swiss Army, a guy that can plug in, and like he plays 10, 12, 13 and fullback, and he's clearly a smart rugby player. Like you think of the way he played at the weekend, which is completely different than any other way he'd be asked to play, like an aggressive defensive get up, stop Mawala, stop Matsushima, read a game, read a blitz D. Like that's hard. It's hard for any 13 to be good at that. And shifting from 10 or 12 or 15 makes it even more impressive. So mate, absolutely. Like a chance as well, like you say, through a double, he is key. And I'm not sure he realizes it. Like really nice bloke, didn't really talk about it too much, but he is key. He is key for them every single week. Wherever he's asked to play, he does a job and he's excellent. So really smart bloke, smart rugby player. And look, one of the good ones as well, like another one that wants to stay, passport, wants to work hard, wants to graft, wants to enjoy his wine, like we all do, and make his life here. So great bloke. It was great to have him on.
You mentioned it there, Johnny, like 13, the most difficult position to defend on a rugby pitch. Against Josh Mawala, Matsushima, Penno, the lot.
Yeah.
No tries conceded.
Yeah, made it look easy. And look, we touched on a little bit with the key people that he has around him. Like you're with Intermac at 10. You've got Peter Aki, who's been phenomenal again all year at 12. Smart people around him, good levels of communication. He speaks French really well. And look, he makes it look easy. But I don't think people at home will be able or realize how hard that is to do. 13 is the hardest place on a pitch to defend. And he was playing as world-class people at the weekend. So look, really impressive, lovely bloke. And he's doing a tremendous job for them.
Hello, I'm Geraint Thomas.
And I'm Tom Fordyce.
And this is your official invite to come and join our brand new cycling club.
Now, good news, it's a podcast too, so you can come and listen to us, try and build this club from scratch, and we'll have a few familiar faces joining us for the ride too. Right, G, time to tell everyone what we've called this club.
Well, we thought long and hard about this, so we came up with a strong, original name that really stands out. The Geraint Thomas Cycling Club.
Yeah, I suppose it's easy to remember at least, isn't it? We will have new episodes for you every single Tuesday.
Come and join us.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The one French team we haven't spoken about yet in the Champions Cup quarterfinals is La Rochelle. And I'm going to start putting some money on your predictions, I think, Benji, because even Johnny didn't agree that they were going to smoke Sale, but they did.
Mate, I'm really impressed by them. Because Sale actually, funnily enough, for the first 25 minutes, put them under a lot of pressure. They didn't actually allow them to create the way or to dominate the game like maybe they thought they were going to. Sale got, obviously, they've got some very good players. Curry, the Safas that they get, Faf de Klerk and the Dupreez brothers and all that. And they obviously have got some quality. But then La Rochelle was struggling a little bit. And I think, again, like I mentioned, you know, the reason why Toulouse are so good and I reckon they really are strong contenders to it is because they've got plan A, B, and C. And it's the first time that I saw La Rochelle have a plan B, basically, where they have those big units that are capable of carrying the ball, Will Skelton, Winnie Antonio, and all that. They've got a graft behind. Brice Duland obviously been very, very instrumental coming back in and stuff like that. But they've got some serious, serious capacity to... I mean, when's the last time we spoke about Victor Vito? Everybody's forgotten about him. He's only a World Cup winner for the ABs. He's absolute class. And he had a monster of a game on Saturday. And so basically, you just... When you forget about how good a guy like him can be, that means the depth of the squad is extraordinary. When you forget that actually, yeah, no, they can have a plan B. They can kick the ball. They can have a good strategic eye about it. There was a rush defensive sale, but we'll try to, instead of, you know, playing the small meter after meter thing that they normally do and try to stay up on our feet and offload, then we'll kick to the corners, see how he goes. I thought they played really smart. In the end, they completely blew them out of the park because they overpowered them. And they did that really well while still keeping disciplined, while still sort of biting the bullet at certain moments. And that's why I was really impressed by them. Now, the only problem, but of course, it's semi-finals. You're never going to play against any bozos from around the corner. They got Leinster. Poof. And Leinster against Exeter, I was very, very impressed. 14-0 down after 10 minutes. Johnny Sexton gone. And the way that they came back, wow, they can chuck the ball around. So I think Winnie Antonio, Will Skelton, all the big fellas, they're going to have Ventolin and triple shot of oxygen masks behind them because, wow, they're going to have to cover a lot of ground. Oh, mate, yeah, there's going to be a lot of that. But then again, that's Jono Gibbs, Ronan O'Gar, they know that. They're not going to be surprised by that. So they'll prepare a plan for, I don't know. You know, we need to play 30 minutes, come off, come back, whatever it is, and they'll have a plan behind it.
I think that the image that summed that game up for me was Faf de Klerk's face. So as he came off the pitch at 60,
he was angry. Yeah?
Just complete dejection. Like his team had just been bullied in every single sense, like physical, smart, aggressive, like every single facet of the game, they smashed them. So like I was massively impressed. And the more I watch, the more I'm impressed by Gibbs and O'Garrett, like as a coaching team and what they do, how they've got their team playing. They're insane. Look, they're organized, aggressive, the speed of the ball they generate and they play with. I love the way they alternate the point of contact as well. It's not just about Skelton like being a big, like tip-ons, balls out the back, shifting the point of contact, keeping defenses guessing. Mate, they're a joy to watch. And some of the thought into what, like stupid stuff like kick chase. We just heard Zach talking about Toulouse, how they alternate, but the way they pressurize Sale's fullback made him look silly, put him under pressure, knock-ons, turned over, time and time again. Mate, it was really impressive. I absolutely loved watching them. They're clearly well-coached, inventive, and they execute at a really high level. And I think like, if you're going to take that next step and go and win something like this competition, that's what you need. I think a lot of French teams over the year have had that power, had that pace, but they haven't had that next level and maybe the top 2 inches that were functioning, and they just absolutely clicked. They were insane to watch. I absolutely loved them. And you look back to some of the tries they scored and also the defensive efforts that they had. Clearly, the analysis, the way they'd work things through, the ball that goes inside Tom Curry straight off a lineout because they see Tom Curry fixes on 10, inside ball to a winger, and he goes through untouched. Like, really simple stuff, but they'd completely outthought Sale. And then you complement that with the power battle. You talked about the Dupreez boys, but like, he had a bit of punch, but when you've got Will Skelton and Botia holding you up over the line, turning, like there's nowhere to go. So look, they've got this amazing blend of power, pace, and precision. They were just so clinical. That was what shocked me watching them, was how clinical they were. And then it was comprehensive and certainly the best game of the weekend. It was a joy to watch.
So three French teams into the Champions Cup semi-finals, which is obviously something we'll celebrate. But why do you think it has been such a vintage year? Is it the fact that kind of Bordeaux and La Rochelle, who aren't historically big European names, their projects are kind of coming to fruition at a similar time, or why has it been such a vintage year for the French sides?
I think, to be honest, for me, it's more than one thing. There's also been some points that were awarded to a lot of teams that were, listen, it's a random year, right? There's those eights of finals when they put their hand in the bag, boop, 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 right? You're going to come through. And it is very random. But I think you've got it spot on. It's when everybody decides to go flat out at it. Even Lyon, for once, took it relatively seriously, but they fell in Exeter because that was just out of reach. But you're right, it's La Rochelle, Bordeaux finally deciding to say, right, we're actually going to seriously want to challenge, test ourselves, represent proudly the country and or the area and go full on at it. And that's when the result is different. We're not going to learn anything by saying or teach anything to anyone by saying that the top 9 or 10 clubs of top 14, bloody hell, of course they've got the quality to be in Champions Cup, and all of them could do some serious damage. So that's never been the issue. The issue is that when Castres, how the hell do Castres win two Boucliers in the last 6-7 years, maybe, Johnny, something like that? And how come they've never even challenged anyone in Champions Cup? Because they don't care about it. They play one game, you lose once at home, fini, pack it up, go. And that's one thing that La Rochelle didn't do, that Bordeaux didn't do, that Racing don't do anymore, and that Clermont and Toulouse have never done.
I think there's several different elements. I completely remember, like Fabien Galthié did not care. that the pressure was top 14, finish high in the top 14, Brennus. That was it. If there's a choice to be made, and that's actually a bit of a tangent, but that's where I think Montpellier have actually maybe shot themselves in the foot by winning their game and getting through to the next round of the Challenge Cup, because now they've got that added side pressure. When they need to focus on the top 14, they could go down. That could still happen. So, look, absolutely, it's been a shift in focus. I think COVID, no crowds, winning away from home always helps. But generally for me, the standard of top 14 has shifted. The past two, three seasons, it's just gone up a level. And now they're competing, if not dominating, British and Irish sides in a way that they haven't done in the past. So it's really exciting. And look, we've mentioned before, but an Urios getting into Bordeaux, they've had massive budget for years, but never quite clicked, never quite been decent on the field consistently. Christophe's a great coach. You look at what La Rochelle are producing, well-organized team, world-class players. You mentioned Vito, but we didn't mention Aldrit or Gourdon, either side of them, who've been phenomenal as well. So look, there's loads of little things that are clicking at the right time for French rugby, and loads of these projects that have been bubbling away for years are now kicking on to the next level. And that's where it's so exciting. So to have three of the four sides, potential winners being French, is tremendous.
And just briefly before we go, a couple of big derby games in the top 14 this weekend. We mentioned one of them with Zach, the other, Clermont-Brive, Benji. Give us an idea of what that game's like to play in, what it means to the players, the fans.
So 170 Ks between the two. They call it a local derby, which is not. It's two different areas. But for some reason, they've built up this thing and the fans believe it and the players believe it and everybody believes it that Clermont is the rich and it's the London Wasps, Leicester Tigers at the time. And Brive have got the real values and they're the real people and we represent the village and you guys are overpaid, smug, arrogant little shits, basically. Whereas, yeah, have you ever been to Clermont? Clermont is a hardworking industrial town. Nothing to do. It's not the capital, right? But they've painted it this way. I mean, to the point where it's funny. It's the first time that you would rock up with a Clermont bus and they would have guys with, how do you call it? Fumigène, Johnny.
Like flares.
Yes, like, there you go.
Brive, there's probably 18,000 or 20,000 maximum population in Brive. And the guy is cracking, you know, those smoke things before. I'm like, chill out, mate. Come on, it's rugby. And you were in Brive. You're not in the middle of the Bronx, you know. And that just spiked up. I mean, I've had a really my only very humiliating, not humiliating, but very sad moment on a rugby pitch. Was 2-3 years ago after beating Brive, and there was a guy singing the most horrendous song about my mother that I'm not going to deep, but yelling it full tilt that I almost lost my shit. So I was going through the security guy pulled me out, and then the really nice captain for Brive, Saïd Iresh, who was a youngster coming through Stade Français, and while I was there, I've got a really good relationship, came to get me and stuff. He's like, just forget about him. There's always one idiot. I said, yeah, but I'm not pissed off about him. He was drunk and an idiot, and he's probably he's got a very, very sad life to come out with some horrendous stuff like he did. But there's nobody, there was kids next to him. Nobody taps him on the shoulder, be like, you know, shut the fuck up. What are you saying? You know, there was none of that. So it's a massive derby. I think it makes people lose their heads because they've got the Brive are basically convinced, or the Brive fans, sorry, are convinced that Clermont don't respect them. And it's the big against the small, the rich against the poor, the lucky against the unlucky, whatever. In the end, it's just a matter of Brive have always played with a lot of spirit, a lot of passion, a lot of gut. And that's what they're doing this year. And to be honest, and they're really doing a fantastic season considering the small budget and the small area that they're doing. And the epiphany of that is Saïd Iresh, the number six for them. He's playing with his heart in his sleeves and he's a phenomenal guy. And so Clermont would be tested on that. But like I said to Zach, I thought they really played well in terms of putting some dog into the fight against Toulouse. And I hope they bring that against Brive because they're going
to
need it.
Not good to hear that story, Benji. But is it one of those derbies where you often get it in football where it means more to one than the other? So as in, how do Clermont say it? Is it very much coming from the Brive direction?
Yeah, I'd say so. And without any disrespect, I think Brive won in Clermont probably once in the last 20 years, right? We've won in Brive a fair few times. So there's clearly a difference of level. There's clearly a difference of importance in it because Clermont will always play Brive when you've got Europe, you've got top 14, you got this. Brive will fight for a relegation, but they've got one game that, you know, they underline and put a red flag and red paper around that one. Those fuckers from Clermont coming, the rich guys, and they go and go. So you're totally right. It means a lot more to them than to Clermont. But at the same time, I think every rugby player, we like a derby. In France, at least, we like a derby. It's just special. I mean, Johnny will talk to you about the Bayonne-Biarritz derby. That's completely different, but I think the boys enjoy those games. That's what we like about rugby. As long as after the game, you go back to the normal, real stuff, which is, listen, rugby's rugby. Let's have a few beers, have a laugh about it, get all that anger out on the pitch, and then we're all human beings and we respect each other, right? But that wasn't the case for that idiot.
And another derby as well. I didn't mention Pau Bayonne, Johnny.
Yes, there's derbies everywhere this weekend. You've got the 64 derby, as it's called in this part of the world. So you've got Pau against Bayonne, which again is a battle of the relegation basement. But huge for everyone down this part of the world. You mentioned Bayonne-Biarritz, but this one is as big as it gets in the top 14 for Bayonne. And look, the context of where both teams are is huge. So Hastoy, who's been playing at 10 for Pau all season, who picked up a Oscar from Midi Olympique, I think 2 weeks ago, Benji, he's been sensational for them this season. He's injured. They've brought in Elton Jantzies from South Africa. I'm not sure if he'll make the pitch this weekend. I don't think he'll. I think he'll be too close, but look, that's a huge game. There's loads of weird things around that game as well. You've got Joel Ray, who was the old captain of Pau, who was my forwards coach at Bayonne. His son is the captain of Pau. Great young hookers. Like, there's all these little different derbies in within the derbies. It's a family affair. And it's a huge game because you've got Pau now. This is a game in Pau on 32 points, so second bottom. Bayonne on 39 and 12. So look, if Pau don't win this game, it's almost like they're saying, child to top 14, and they're in a real battle. So it's a huge win for them. They've won the last three head-to-head with Bayonne, so they'll be confident, but a huge game. And then the other one that I enjoyed, Benji, as you were talking about, Brive Clermont, is CAS Toulouse. And we mentioned it a little bit with Zach, but exactly the same. It's the village people, the town people, the sort of the peasants, as we consider ourselves in CAS, against the townies, the rich kids of Toulouse. And look, it is the game of the season. It's a shame there's no fans there. I know how much it means to everyone in CAS. It's a huge game. And like you said, a much more local derby than that's massive space between Brive and Clermont, whereas, you know, it's 35 minutes between CAS and Toulouse and they absolutely hate each other. So look, that's a huge game. And then you've got Racing against Stade as well, the old Parisian derby that you'll played a fair few. Again, that's just rich against rich, Benji, is it not? Is Richie rich? What's the chat between those two teams?
They used to be a huge rivalry. It's one of those rivals that was massive when I was a kid. When I was 14, 15, the youngsters, we'd always kick the shit out of each other. There was hardly any rugby played. At the top level, it's all gone, mate. It's honestly, it's all gone. It's still special. It's the rivalry. Who's going to be the king of Paris? At the moment, I think Stade Français are more focused on let's get some points. Forget about who, irrespectively who's in front of you, let's get some points.
Thanks, Benji. Thanks, Johnny. And we look forward to a host of derbies in the top 14 this weekend. And thanks to all of you for listening as well. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review, and we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, guys.
Cheers.
See you, fellas.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.